Okay, ready?
Dave's just walking in. You're getting your butter, yeah, I mean, they're all in there.
Yes, I'll stand down.
All right, Deb. Call to order, Public Lands and Buildings meeting this Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. Have you called the roll?
Sure. Walt Chanowitz? Tagliati? Tracus?
Thanks, everyone, for coming. We're going to switch things up a little bit in the order that they are listed. We're going to start, we'll start with number one, then we're going to jump to number six. So, we'll start off the resolution 2022-20.
I'm just giving you an overview. Litigation on West Creek. And there's been some litigation involving essentially the fees that were being or could potentially be charged under the declaration of restrictions that were filed with the county. They came to a resolution involving their lawsuit, and the city was not a party to it. And speaking with the lawyers felt that it was important to have some
remix it, so
work by the city filed with the county, because the declaration city is I guess for lack of better word, third party beneficiary in the declarations and the way the plats and the subdivisions were approved. And lawyers felt that it was important for future homeowners to have an affidavit of that place into the essentially the public record. Let's turn it over, whatever they want to add.
Can you just mention your name so
it's time? David Horvath for the association. With the resolution was intended to do is authorizing their courts to assign an affidavit of facts that the city does not have an objection to removing the restriction from the plat map. George Burns, who represents a developer and a number of different parties, felt that all of the plat maps had been redrawn without the restriction, resubmitted to council, reapproved, and then go through the process of why are we reapproving plat maps when houses are ready to be built, etc., when all there is a ledger entry in the bottom of the plat map that says the environmental parcels are to be held in perpetuity by West Creek Conservancy. The problem is every time somebody does a title search on something, they still get a pop-up because it's technically a restriction on alienation. So in order to remove that, we're filing an amended declaration to the association removing that. But in order to do that too, to I don't want to say bypass and flip circuit the city process, including the plat maps. It's easier to file an affidavit of facts that says, yes, we understood what happened. Yes, we understand that these four parcels were supposed to be held this way. Yes, we understand it's in the plat map. And no, we don't object to it being removed. But to do that, all the parties felt it would be nice if the city would, you know, sign off on that without having to go through all the system of redrawing the plat maps. So, another $1,900 a piece, having my life down 50 by county. So it's just a simple resolution to say, yes, the mayor is authorized to sign an affidavit that says they're removing that from the plat map and it's not objectionable to the city. That's really all I'm doing. Any questions I'm happy to answer.
So no liability to the city at all?
All right. Actually, in my opinion, benefits the city. Because there's a direct pipeline or something is wrong there, directly to the homeowners that have to go through the trustee and the trust trustees and the homeowners and the users and setting up these things. It's not on the red line.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, thanks. We'll move on. Number six, the Haydite Mine.
Well, we took toward that, but council's going to vote on this next week.
Yeah, this will be back out.
You already voted on an aspect of this earlier?
We.
Reading as well.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay. We really kept it up.
I got that, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we'll move on to the Haydite Mine. We had some questions concerning.
Yeah, this was something that I had asked the chairman to add to the agenda because of the closure to Haydite Mine. There was some reclamation work that was necessary, and I just wanted to know if the city's been monitoring that and how long we are with our property and the street's property, and if there's a timeline looking forward to completion.
That, I think Derek would be best to address this, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Derek, would you?
Yep. Derek Schaefer, Westbury Conservancy. So I'll try non-convoluted as possible. So there are about 15 different parallel tracks with respect to the former Haydite Mine. One, it is, yes, it's shut down and secure and maintained. And the first step of the process was referred to as an O2G exemption. So we're going through the process with the O2G exemption, which is basically grading, capping, vegetating with remnants of the film. It's bag dust. So it's an inert material that will be graded and capped and sculpted on site. The O2G exemption request is at the Ohio EPA. That was one letter to the city. And we had to do a significant amount of planning in order to even ascertain the documentation necessary to make the request for O2G exemption. Now, that's the first step of the process, which plays into the antiquated reclamation plan that was done decades ago. It does not fit the caliber of the problem. The mine ceased operations early, and there are other walls that are existing on the property that were not supposed to be there with another 30, 40 more years of mining. So the O2G drives the next phase of suggesting revisions to the reclamation plan. So that's kind of the next step, is that once we ascertain the O2G exemption approval from the Ohio EPA, that process begins, but then we start making our request for revisions to the former reclamation plan. So there is a plan in place, and the clock is ticking on our end, 20 months-ish to complete the reclamation, but the reclamation at the standard now is just not feasible. So that's why we have to suggest certain revisions to the plan so that we can kind of close that out with the Department of Natural Resources Division and Mineral Resources. So there's a lot to take into account because we can't change certain high walls without doing certain things that ODNR doesn't even have authority to regulate us on. We'd have to go through the Highway EPA. So if we were to remove one part of the south high wall, we would actually have to go through the Army Corps, the Highway EPA, the Northeast Ohio Regional Food District, and the city to all ascertain approval for filling, moving, and otherwise adversely impacting wetlands and streams. And you know, ODNR doesn't regulate anything on streams under 300 square miles. Obviously, the tributary that comes in under the south side of the mine is not 300 square miles of drain. So we're trying to figure out who's on first. Because when we're out there with DNR, we were trying to suggest certain reclamation revisions. And so we kind of had to evaluate the totality of the process. In addition to the O2G, we kind of looked at the future end use of the property. You know, kind of no throttle, don't do anything, half throttle, make it passively accessible, full throttle, look at a plethora of different options for small scale economic development and recreation, while also maintaining that there is an archaeological or historical easement held by the National Park on the Native American side. So then we have to worry about certain stream and wetland restoration projects by the sewer district and others if they kind of encircle the site. Plus, we can't do anything that negatively impacts the railroad. And then we kind of have to consider all the options of development based on a slew of factors, whether it's on hillside or old stone road. It's, I guess my answer is, it's in process. It's just as could be any more complicated. But the very first step, then we're hoping to get approval from the OT, so we can just, you know, grade, cap, us around, and we don't want it further eroded. So we basically, it's moved away from the bottom of the water, but now we have to kind of graze the path of possession. And most of the reclamation as proposed is grading, sculpting, capping. The mine, it's not the entirety of the site, so there's only portions of the mine that pertain to the mining permit in order to close it. So it's not the entirety of the site. So that adds another layer of, what do we do with the rest? So in the interim, it's kind of just, you know, clean it and green it and get the rest of the remnants of the old facility out of there. And so we also have to maintain access for Fast Energy or Chesapeake at this time, but there are a couple of active oil wells that we do have to maintain access as well. And there's also utilities that come left and right as well. So it's just, I couldn't think of one more problem that this site has, but you know, the very first step is the O2G in the reclamation revision while considering future potentiality of end use product.
And we have security cameras. We're in concert with Derek's group. Council authorized security cameras, so we have some monitoring system in place. But in addition, you've asked for the city supports you in your initial, what's the most recent request? You're trying to get support from who for grants or?
That's a super good question. County Councilman Jack Shaw resides within his district, and they have certain ARPA funding available. And it would be advantageous to us if we could leverage. I think the maximum is $250,000, and we could leverage an additional $250,000 on top of that. Part of the reclamation provision, our plan as it stands right now, is you have to think of the site as complex hydrology. So water is going to continue to infiltrate that way, for that body of water. It's going to continue to rise until it hits a certain elevation where it needs to leave the site. And one potentiality is very expensive. You can move it to the north. Let's just call it to the north, toward Hemlock Creek. But that requires a significant topographical issue, or it has a significant topographical issue, where you'd actually have to create kind of a break of drainage, a weir system to kick it out in Hemlock Creek. The other one is that along kind of just the middle of the site, around the Native American site, there's a ferry stream that exits underneath the culvert, underneath the rail, into the national park and into the Cuyahoga River. So the 250 that we were proposing would, you know, catalyze into 500, so we could daylight that stream and provide a natural exit for that water as it reaches an elevation of, don't quote me on the elevation, it's somewhere between 620, 630, but eventually if you were to go there, it's the old access road down into the pit. The water is going to hit that level. It's going to reach a static level with the current buried stream. So basically, you unbury the stream, give it a natural channel to naturally migrate out of the site, but also being cognizant that the culvert is both culverts that go underneath the railroad, kind of to the downstream and the upstream reach, both undersized. So this is going to require some coordination of the federal government, the railroad, the sewer district, everybody. But the most recent support would be to try to daylight that stream in order to provide a natural house. So, yeah.
Are we having fun yet?
Like, I was just glad I'm not in charge of that.
Situations and refining them into something that people can understand. So,
is that a real simple project?
No, it was.
No.
Sure.
We did have
in the agreement a time frame for all of this to be done. I presume that's not going to be very valid, but what are the consequences?
That's dictated by OD&I.
Yes. That's as when we did like the final report, that starts the clock ticking for reclamation.
Okay.
So we're kind of in like the
5 years.
It's 8 years. It's a weird time frame. It was like start. I want to say I got 20 months.
December 30th, 2020.
And that's pending any revision to the reclamation plan, because we have to get ODNR to understand that the current reclamation plan, I don't want to say it's invalid, but it's definitely not possible in many respects. And even regulations have changed where we just can't move a stream without any other repercussion from any other regulatory entity. it would be pretty ironic if I had to mitigate our own wetlands and streams in order to dump a stream channel into the body of water only to let the water out somewhere else. And I have to pay for it somewhere else. I mean, it's, so we're trying to demonstrate the irony of mitigating ourselves to actually meeting the requirements of the same, literally, entity. Because ODNR and OEPA coordinate with U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on 401 and 404 permitting, even wetland mitigation. So our big, one of our big hiccups with implementing the former reclamation plan is trying to acquiesce to the plan, because then we'd have to go to two separate regulatory bodies, three separate regulatory bodies, get them to agree on allowing something that another regulatory body is forcing us. And they didn't have, like, they didn't have a whole lot of consensus of who is going to say yes. So we're trying to put together the reclamation plans, revisions, to show them a different task.
What are Derek doing?
Yes.
Derek, how close is that area that you want to open up for the drainage to the Native American site? And how is that being protected right now?
The entire, well, I would say the north face of the Native American site, if you were to walk the site, you kind of see an artificial berm right along the edge of the Native American site. That stream now running, kind of, it runs along the toe of it, essentially. But the pipe where it goes underground is a little more northward, so basically we would be taking the stream channel away from the Native American site, giving it a different elevation to breach out a body of water and enter a new created channel system versus a buried system, so that it meets where the culvert is. So it'd be basically taking the stream buried however many feet below, allowing the lake to enter into the new channel while removing the pipe, avoiding the gas wells, and then entering the culvert underneath the road. So we'd actually be moving it away from the Native American site.
Okay. Yeah. And how is the Native American site currently protected?
As a national park easement.
And what about actual protection around it, physical protection?
No. Because the entirety of the site has fencing on it. Even when we assumed ownership or management, there was no additional fencing on that, because half of it actually faces the body of water. Half of it's kind of blocked by a stream channel. And the only site that, the only part of it that is kind of quasi accessible, you want to be bushwhack, would be up the old maintenance road that kind of goes south toward us.
And there was a financial contribution from the donating company and some money in escrow for a period.
There's a bond.
There's a bond.
Restoration bond?
Yes.
And has that been dropped against?
No, held by
the owner. The way the lease works is that they met, unless it's extended, the city can access the bond following the deadline date of December 30th, 2020. Yeah. Who's holding on to that?
DNR.
DNR. You know the amount? $500,000?
No, I don't recall.
And then just for the committee's benefit, yeah, Derek was right. This restoration plan, pretty vanilla, entered into about 30 years ago.
1995.
And then it only involves four tracks, two previously owned by the former owner and two owned by the city, essentially the pit area.
Yeah.
And deals with essentially opening up for a recreation area for the public.
Yeah, I mean, it calls out pontoon boats. And I think we don't acquiesce, hopefully we don't want pontoon boats.
No, I think it'd be pretty cool.
Kayaks.
So right, it's about 28 months then we have them.
Yeah, you do. And then the only other question I have, because I just asked Don, so the way I understand it, more so for the committee's benefit, is you're going through all the process, which I think is great, all the due diligence, and it sounds like you're going to need some amendment to the, you know, When is the city going to be kind of part of the process, or a member of the city? I would hate for you to go down this road and maybe,
right.
The vision's going to be just recreation area, but it'd be nice if the city had at least
We are not done with that at all. We wanted to get the O2G exemption first, because that was kind of like the kicker that decides the next level of playing field. We can start involving the city pretty soon. We have to finish up our modeling, the water elevation rise and circumstances of pretty much everything in the south side. So, and we're also putting together kind of the costs of the former restoration plan, the reclamation plan, and the, what we're going to suggest is the current proposed reclamation. So as soon as we have some of that basis, I can share that with us.
In the interim, meanwhile, we're exploring what could play what if on that 114 acres plus the 68 acres that Derek controls. We're talking 200 acres of an uncut diamond as far as I'm concerned. Some of it's got restricted easements from the national park slope that deals with along the railroad. But the thought is, I just believe with the Hemlock Trail and different potential amenities that on our property as well as their property, that I'd like to see if council would be willing to put some money and effort into it, exploring. And we've done some stuff with OHM just to play what if, a very 30,000 foot view. But I just wonder what council's appetite to drill down a little bit more and something to determine if there's any there's a willingness to look at some of that land of ours for additional recreation purposes or alternative use that that complements everything in that area. I mean, with the success of the Hemlock Trail and having our property, there's other trails you could there's no end to what you could think you could put your vision hat on. So just think about it, because we'll have something. We'll have something to at least something to discuss with OHM and Derek, just to say, look, at least we explored the possibility. Now, if we want to invest time, effort, money beyond that, then this group here or future councils will help determine that. But I thought it was prudent for us to at least explore a 30,000 foot view over the whole property. What could we do or what potential do we have? That while Derek is managing that 68 acres, what potential do we have to complement our 114 acres? So keep that in mind. As soon as we have something that we can have a further discussion, probably consistent with what you're doing, if you'd come back and we can have a roundtable discussion, a workshop of council, that'd be great to entertain that council.
And I believe there were some renderings by the Floyd Brown's group from back in the 90s or maybe early 2000s, some walking trails, pavilion, gazebo overlooks in that area. So
if it kind of goes up. Yeah, we'll look at the old one. I think they've incorporated those or looking at those in terms of an overall strategy. But yeah, absolutely. It complements everything that we're trying to determine what our limits are and what potential we have.
That would be nice to join in because you're the chair of the Hemlock Committee.
That seemed to be a logical network of trails. Maybe leave them to the downtown.
Especially, talk about the visitation center down there and stuff. So
they got the linkage with the park, obviously. So they'd be a big part of this.
Yeah. Well, then we're going to just stay. I think Derek went on the right path and you can hear a flavor of what we're from council, which is good. So then we'll drill down a little bit more and follow your lead in terms of some of these timetables, what you need to get accomplished.
Absolutely.
We can complement what you're doing. It could be a part of a major strategy for that area. That would be great for future generations.
At least twice in the last few months, there have been a bunch of trees in the area of the Blue Hole that have gotten tagged and spray painted, and then service went out and covered it up and then came back again. So just wondering if we have any capability of have any kind of portable camering that possibly we could use to get a hold of those people. And
well, we might be able to expand some of our existing cameras we authorized in council to look at that.
We've got access to drones, right? See what's going on.
Well, I'm just some kind of options because they were there. It was reported. We had this Tony Epenzeller came out and had it covered up, and they reappeared a month and a half later, and we had it recovered again.
Who's doing this then?
That's a great question.
Thanks for bringing that up.
And they taxed some of the bridges too, I think, recently too.
And Derek, is the A2G, is that holding you up from tearing down the kiln, or is there a reason that's still standing?
The O2G is not holding us up from anything else on the site except for just the generally next phase of reclamation. It's just it is the first phase. Now the kiln, it's kind of, and I know it looks like a giant cannon, but it also kind of honors the unique industrial heritage of the site. So, and I'm not going to quote Speedo DiGeronimo at all or any of the DiGeronimo family, but one of the original parts of the deal is that that cannon was going to come down and go away. I don't know that things are current, that apparently the company was going to take them, but as of right now, kiln is staying. It's very unique industrially, and it has a 180-year-old history to site. And it could be, you know, this is a unique site that you can honor its story, past, and history. It has archaeological, historical, industrial, recreational, and even potentially economic development. So you kind of look at the plethora of factors here. So I guess the short and long of it is right now the kiln is kind of just unique to the site and keeping it until we decide that absolutely has to come down.
Now, can the kiln, I mean, if it is already, can it be marked or as like a historical site for the city where it can't be removed?
I think what we're hearing is that this could another feature of that location, which honors its history and its heritage, just like national parks done throughout the entire park area when they've restored older buildings, part of the town out in Jate, paper mill, they restored some of the elements of the canal. Towpath. So I think this is another one that warrants discussion because of history. It's a unique situation.
Having been up in the kiln, is it currently protected in a way that people go over the fence that they were not a liability issue?
I mean, you can't climb into the kiln. It's just held up by concrete pillars that, unless you're, I guess, Spider-Man, you can get up there.
Yeah.
But there's no ladder, no chain system, anything to get you in there. We're never going to stop, stupid. We're just not. Security, fancy, everything that we try, people will inevitably cut. When we're talking about people hopping fences, it's no longer just kind of people passing by a hop. They're down with bulk. It is malintent. It's not people just finding a loop in the fence. We fix the fence dozens. I don't know how many dozens. No trespass inside of the blocks. Because they're on the exterior of the fence. It's a common place to put them that can't get to them. You just got to use the bull. But yeah, I'll end with my comment. We're not going to stop stupid, but you know, it's just a kind of a piece of structure on the property, similar to any other structure on any other.
Derek, how often does the cameras pick up activity?
Often.
Weekly,
sometimes, weekly. But the alarm will go off. Police are dispatched. So it has slowed way down. I mean, there was a lot of activity, but then people quickly learn that this time and it will charge. So
we're prosecuting.
I never get that information. They actually, sometimes
should.
Questions. Yeah, it's kind of setting an example.
Does that go to Mayor Court or Garfield Heights Court, or what does that go to?
It goes to Garfield.
Garfield?
Yeah, I hope they're tough on that thing because it's a dangerous situation. But I mean,
yeah, I haven't heard of seen any cases.
Does anybody else have any questions for Derek?
Thank you, Derek.
Derek, thanks. Thank really you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, from number six, we're going to move on to Dave. We're going to go to we'll go to the air handlers. And John and Vance Controls first, and then we'll do the windows after that, since they were right. They've been here.
Sure.
So, if you want to get us up to date,
I have Jason Lockhart here, he's from Carrier. Three units here, Carrier units. One unit controls the VR. We put in a new chiller four plus years ago, and now the second phase is the air handlers. One air handler handles the another handler handles this side of the house, and a third one handles the police department. All three air handlers are 4 years old, 40 plus. So they've lived their useful. And we've replaced motors, we replaced here, we replaced quite a few cars. They're 5 horsepower, 10 horsepower, and 15 horsepower. Well, the smallest one being count by favor. Second with 10 horsepower, and one it takes care of the police department. Anyways, this time we talked about it, you put money in the budget. This is the next phase for City Hall. These units, no matter what we do with City Hall, these units are going to handle. They're going to be there every area. They talk about other units, they talk about split systems in each room. It just doesn't work that way. It won't handle all these. These are the units that are going to be there. So I brought Jason Lockhart in, their Carrier units. I brought him in to answer any questions. We've had him on board now for 3 years to work on. And the original, we had talked about there's a couple ways to put them in. You could open up the roof, cut out the rafters, some joists, purlins, and put the units in. Then you got to close it all apart. You found out that would be a little more expensive. Carrier would offer to build them on site, come in with components and build each one on site. And we've experienced this with the pullback. Worked out really well. In other words, pullback at Civic Center, we're going to have to open up the building, all the brick, the block, and then bring the unit in. Did the same thing with the pullback. Very successful. Nice unit, all put together real nice. Same as putting it together in a factory. Assembling a car in a factory, we're assembling that on site. So I have no problem with that. We have to open up a few dormers. We don't have to open up the roof. We have to take a wall out upstairs, which we'll handle that, tech can handle that. And they can put them in and then we can put things back. So if you have any questions for Jason, I mean, that's what we need to do this. There's big coils in each unit, like a big rating. And air goes through there for cooling, and those coils are old, like an old radiator in a car. They're old. And we've had them leak before. We replaced one. They go into a pan. The pan blinds the whole unit. They're big. I mean, they're big. Half this room. That's how big they are. And if they leak, they go into the pan. Well, the pans are starting to rot. The new ones have stainless steel pans. The old ones did. They're starting to go a little bit. So if they leak, there's drains up there, but who's to say? Never goes through, they leak, they go through a ceiling, we got more headaches. Anyways, they're replacing all the valves, all the components that go in with it, piping that goes to them, everything. This is a complete installation. So that's where we're at. Jason, if you have any questions for Jason, he's a Carrier's rep. And I have Johnson Controls there also, Mike Geiger, and there's a control component that goes into that after the units are in. The Johnson Controls component is, it's $35,000, just put it that way. And those are the Johnson Controls. They're all 3 units. I've been putting money each year for this, so. Just if there's any questions, and obviously, Chris, you're in the HVAC. You know, you researched this yourself. If you have any questions, or I just brought the guys here so that these are the gentlemen that the companies that do the work.
Right. Now, you say, would those machines come here assembled and then be disassembled and put back together in the building, or are they going to come back already in?
pieces to be put back together, put together from day one, if we do it that route.
So they're going to come from the factory directly to Shippers Holly, which is our breaking company, and then we're going to go on site at Shippers Holly to disassemble, to take them apart. And then we're going to bring them here, disassemble, and reassemble them upstairs. But we will disassemble the originals upstairs and take them to the dormer. And the little hole that he was referring to, cut through the wall, that's where we'll take the large component, which we, it won't fit through the dormer. So, it sounds a lot of, like a lot that's involved, but it's pretty simple. It's something we do regularly.
Because I just know stuff doesn't always go back together 100% the way it comes from the factory. So, I'm just wondering if there's any issues if you don't, you know, that it'll go back 100% the way it came apart.
No, it will own it, but I need your machine, we design the machines, we build the machines, and the same guy that I'm going to be taking most apart. So it's not going to be our field test. We're going to have guys coming in to disassemble those. You can stay doing it on a regular basis.
Okay. And what about if we were to, I'm just throwing it out there, instead of replacing the entire unit, is it feasible to order all the equipment to just replace the components of the machines? So then that would save us from having to tear stuff apart, open the roof, all that stuff. Is that an option on those machines?
You know, that's something you can certainly look into. If you were to replace like the coil, the motor, and all the other components, it's something that you can look into, but we're going to have to really dive into that machine to see exactly what's salvageable. It's not, by the unit being 40 years old, it's going to be pretty difficult to, pretty difficult to believe that a lot of that stuff salvageable, especially when you add in new components. It's like put in, like rebuilding the engine, but you're keeping a lot of the old parts in the old car, so it's sometimes it doesn't work out that way.
Does anybody have questions?
We have all the money encumbered for this thing.
Yes, all the money is in on that. That's a draft of the request for legislation, and I can't outline which POs would be used for it.
Yeah, we have the money in Congress.
First, I saw a memo. He said $240,000 already in town. So this is evidently we're taking $17,000 out of improvements.
Well, and actually, for the city hall, there is money encumbered for miscellaneous improvements, and $17,000 is coming out of the miscellaneous. Also, depending on council's decision and everything. To move forward with the controls, which Michael Geyer is here to talk about Johnson Controls, and there's actually two phases to that. That is a separate proposal. And Michael, maybe you want to address council and mayor on
that. Sure. Hello, guys. Michael Geyer. Thanks for all your time. So, as David's really on top of updating the HVAC equipment across the municipality and City of Independence here, you have Medisys Controls, the response control flagship building management system. So that's basically what you use to change temperature set points and all that. So here in City Hall, you have Medisys Controls. So when you replace a piece of equipment, that new air handler will have to communicate to the Medisys Control so that Dave can set a schedule of operations, basically manipulate the unit for set points and all that kind of things to make sure he can maintain the space. So with this, there's a small portion that would need to be Johnson Controls providing controls, grabbing the points from the new units that Jason provides from Carrier, and making sure that we set up the program so that they communicate back to the existing infrastructure. So basically, that's a small proposal, just about $35,000, that is an ask from our end to help make sure that we put in the new units and then they operate as intended with the existing program. In addition to that, there's a couple things that Dave has kind of asked me to bring to your awareness. Basically, the Medisys system that's been put in place here at City Hall is probably pushing 20, 25 years at this point. It used to be an all-pneumatic system. Then on the onset of digital control, it was updated to a Medisys digital system, and it's now sitting at that same revision, which is what we would call like an aging system. So much like your phone has annual release of iOS or a software update, Johnson Controls also has an annual release of our Medisys program to make sure that our software stays up to date. So it becomes a twofold liability. One is cybersecurity, anything connected to the internet. all of these things are able to intercommunicate over the internet to make sure Dave can be, you know, at a workstation and see the whole facility. So basically there's a multi-step process, and it includes software, which is the program that the controllers run, and it includes hardware improvements. So you can take the software at the front end level, which is, I believe, one of the proposals you're going to see, which is the 65,000 quote. You can take the software up to our most latest revision, and that software gets pushed throughout the entire infrastructure to all the field controllers below it, from the highest level down to the lowest level. The limitations you run into are the 15 to 20-year-old field controllers. It'd be like asking Motorola flip phone 15 years ago to run the latest iOS revision. So basically, there's limitations when it comes to the field controller level throughout your infrastructure. And there's some key areas that Dave is having me look at to target, either as a part of, if we do this, you know, Jason's, if we're going to have an air handler down for a portion of time, that gives us an opportunity to look at the hardware that would be associated with that downstream. So
I think it was trying to
get, trying not to get too technical into all of it, but there, for each room in the building, there's typically going to be one controller associated to it that gives, that talks to the stat on the wall that'll basically dictate the schedule, occupancy, and all that for this room. And what I'm saying is there's 51 VAV controllers that serve all City Hall, and there's hundreds across the city. Many of them need to be looked at for proper operation, for outside air intake. Dampers have failed, and basically it's a whole validation process that needs to take place to make sure the controls are up to date and then operating as intended.
That's down the road.
And that's all down the road.
I wanted Jason to come here and just, you know, Mike, I heard give an overview from Johns Control. This is down the road. This is years. You could focus on that through the years for each building. But the software update, we can do, it doesn't have to be done even for these. Everything's going to operate the same. It doesn't have to be done right away. I just wanted, while Mike was here, I just wanted to give you an update of what needs to take place. And we'll give you a timeline. You know, I'll put it in the five-year capital at each thing. But I just wanted to give you an overview, and I don't want to just spring it on you right away. But right now, the controls will work just fine with our medicine system right now. The controls that we're going to put on the units, the 35,000, they'll work fine. I'm just saying, giving you an overview. I wanted Mike to give you an overview of what we need to do in the upcoming year. And we'll get some pricing. But there's some engineering that needs to be done.
Just for clarification, I gave two proposals there. The proposal for just under 35,000 is the one that will have to be
correct
done with the upping in the area.
And then the software upgrade, it's a whole upgrade move. Give you graphics on a computer. It's just a software upgrade right now. We don't need that right now, but it's coming. I'd like to do it in the future.
But as of right now, it's 257,478 plus the 34,34.
Correct.
Now, do we have money put away for?
There is money in City Hall under its miscellaneous
to cover the Johnson Control.
Yes,
and. I was going to say the Johns Controls, obviously, when we order these units, they're going to be 6 months.
Well,
they're going to be time. I mean, it's going to be, I would say, at least 6 months. Am I correct, Jason?
Yes, about 2025 minutes.
Okay. So what I'm saying is we're going to be in the next year. I'm sure that Johnson will hold their, I mean, we can't get the components anyway, so it would be into the following year for Johns Controls.
No, is Carrier.
But I would like to, at least I wanted to bring it to your attention.
Is Carrier going to hold this price, or do we have to order them in order to hold the price? How's it work?
How long do you need to hold the price?
We just had a price. They just gave us a price increase in June, so I'm sure that they'll hold the price. I'm not going to speak for.
I have another one coming in September, so I have.
I understand.
Carrier told me I got 10% coming sometime in September. So
commercial
residential.
Yeah.
So
our 10% doesn't do a lot. So much. We can hold this number for as long as we can. Obviously, the heads up as to how long.
I'm not anticipating or expecting 3 months, because right now I can't hold my price for a week, for God's sake. So, because our prices are increasing like crazy.
This project's not going to get done until next year.
Yes, we have to order the material. They won't build the material. When we give them the okay, then they would start building the material. It's going to take them, like you said, 25 weeks to build.
We'll approve it. Hopefully, if you're right, we're going to approve it at the September meeting.
Well, I am prepared to submit the request for legislation. If, with council approval, if you would like me to get it on the agenda, I can ask.
It seems like longer we wait.
The price is just going to go up. Can I ask, Jason, on this particular carrier commercial unit, what is your warranty on that one?
It's 1 year standard labor, 1 year standard labor and parts.
So 1 year parts and labor.
Just a couple of factors that we had, instead of maybe we can look into seeing if these are salvageable, maybe just need parts, and have we done that or what?
Well, I looked at it, and I know, Chris, that's a good question. We looked at it, and, I understand it. If you put it in your furnace, your furnace stay at home is 30 years old, whatever. It's probably put a whole new furnace in. If you put a new motor, you can put CO2 controls in there and keep it going. These units are big. I ordered the big box. They come home together. Well, inside that, there's insulation, and all that duct work, there's insulation inside of the units that, in various areas, that, you would have to inspect and take care of that also. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm sure we could come up with a number, but like Jason said, I just don't know if that's decent, if it's a good thing to do. I should say decent. If it's the right,
but it may not be feasible.
If it's the right approach, there's a lot of components. There's, like I say, there's piping, there's valves, there's a lot of components. So if we did it, and we only saved, even if we saved $100,000 or $75,000, we still have an old unit with all the components. And I understand, like I say, the pan. You got to put a new pan, and then that old unit's got to be lifted up. You get the pan, and it's a stainless steel pan, new one. I mean, it's a big job, though. I don't know how much money you'd be saving, but I guess we could do a little research real quick and come up with a number, I mean, if you look at it, 3 units, so you're talking 80 grand per unit. I know it sounds like a lot, but, you put a new furnace in at home, and sometimes, new furnace, new air. Go 15 grand, maybe 20 grand. So these are huge.
40 years.
So 40 years.
But trying to put parts in it, it makes sense. So.
I got to tell you, in fact, we had another fellow from the city of Independence that will come and look at it. First thing he said is, my gosh, these things really run nice. That's the first thing he said. He said, man, I'm telling you, really run smooth, That's a testament to the guys that are taking care of me. And I'm just telling you. Guys know what they're doing to take care of. So I'm just telling you. Okay? I understand. And that's why I like the carriers, because the carrier still has the original prints of what was installed there.
Does carrier offer extended warranties on these?
Yes.
Have we researched or priced
out that? I haven't, but I can.
Well, at a $260,000 investment for a 1 year warranty, if it's another $10,000, and you can get 5 year warranty, extended warranty on it. That's something I think would be interested in.
That's a good valid point.
So, I know residential stuff and some commercial stuff. I got 5 year warranty on commercial, but 10 on most residential stuff. So,
it's a valid point.
So if you can shoot over what our options are for an extended warranty on these machines. So then if we have to have that cost
for those units.
They got a lot of
heat exchangers. Right?
I know there's a lot of, I think they figure that, but
Oh, they take, you guys take the ordinance?
No, they're taken. You see, but they're, they got crane costs, I mean, there's still gonna be a crane, but they got moving costs, they're taking all the components. We don't mind anything, but.
Scratch all of it.
There's recycle money there, sure. But I'm sure they figure that too. Offset there. But no, that's not, we aren't recycling. They're removing it, they gotta take all the dirt, they gotta clean it up.
A consensus from everyone to put this on legislation for September?
Yeah.
And if you can get us those prices on, you know, how many year extensions we are, is capable through carrier? And then you guys can get that to us?
Sure, I'll get it to you right away. I'll get it to you right away, sure, of course. And another component in it, just so, you know, Ryan is applying for a grant. Now, the grant he's applying for is for these units. Now, if we get it, it still doesn't make any difference if we order them, and the grant covers, the grants for up to $250,000. Just so it happens, the units are $249,000. So the grant's up to $250,000. We would have to cover 25% of that. That's great. So if we get it, if we're able to get the grant, great, Ryan, actually, it's due the second.
So I sent it up this morning.
You know, and actually, Michael can address the grant, do you want to share what you shared with Dave and I earlier?
Yeah, that's another component, go ahead.
So, this has been something, basically ever since the onset of COVID and all that, there's been a couple rounds of federal funding, the ESSER 1, 2, 3, and then now the National Rescue Act. So what we have is basically a strategic team that's set up to help you guys procure and find that money. So I'm not gonna act like I'm the subject matter expert, but I got, you know, Dave's pretty aware that some of this funding is there, and anything that pertains to HVAC could be maintenance, you know, outside air dampers, your building automation system. So some of these improvements that I brought up today, basically I can hopefully try to find avenues to funding to pay for some of those things.
We're looking all in here, all the funding we can.
Yeah, Jason's been extremely supportive of the city over in Lowell. So anything you could, that'd be great.
So yeah, I've started from the JCI, Johnson Control side of things, starting that process, and so if we can help alleviate and find some of those funds, and then we also have like cooperative purchasing agreements through Sourcewell Collective, and we have state terms, right? I mean, there's also other avenues that help for us being the incumbent on controls in terms of competitive bid scenarios and helping bring the most value, I guess, is my point of that.
So we just want to bring up, we're looking for source funds. We always do, we do. In other words, there was a, these grants came out, I mean, I wrote a grant 3 years in a row for Old Town Hall. Just, you know, I didn't, you know, got the one guy in a parking lot and I was saying, please, man, get us this money. I can't remember the name, state rep. But anyways, we're constantly looking at money. That's not why I didn't get it.
That's why you would have got it.
And we got Mike here, of course, and he's got a little bit of claim to fame, he's the Michigan State kicker. Number one kicker in ice, baseball kicker.
Against Ohio State when Michigan State beat Ohio State, you know.
I think it's a celebration where I went down the field, hopefully you guys help, okay.
Yeah, well, I'm not.
It's okay, I'm just kind of seeing the grants and report, because the Biden administration lets a lot of screens to attach everything, you want to make sure we're.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, free doesn't mean free.
You're
right to see that.
So, go ahead. Now that we know what team Mike's on. This, I mean, the contract here, I didn't understand kind of what you were explaining at first, but could you just, you know, some basics again, this $35,000 and everything on here. The only thing it says you're going to do is install the controls on 3 units. I mean, nothing else is, what controls, what kind of controls and materials. So just, you know, $35,000 is to do what? Because I don't know the industry.
Yeah, sure. No, I got it. So what that is basically there's
hardware that we install in the field. So what you have is, you're going to have updated hardware that's going to be attached to the units that Jason.
So there's some material involved.
Well, we call them field controller, the industry term. It's basically, it's a computer that has hardwired inputs and outputs. And we would work in conjunction with the control to come on the carrier unit. Any valves, dampers, sensors, anything that needs to communicate to Medisys, our control system, so that we can properly maintain and operate those units, is included in this in terms of programming. So we would have to have a Johnson control technician come out here. He would try to preload the program previous, and then based on the carrier unit, if there's any updates to how it operates, such as if the fan has a variable frequency drive or something that wasn't a part of the previous program, we would have to update the program. So there's field time for our technician to come in and basically ensure proper operation of the unit as it's installed.
They work with air balancers to go from room to room. Each room in this building will test it and test it again. So that's what they, I had a good question, Don. There's more to it than just saying we're going to lose the wires.
It's continuing on what we're getting. How do you even quote? I mean, you get kind of just a buffer of time that things are going to.
So that's what it is, a quote. So obviously I have risk on my end. What I did put one thing in here, and actually Jason and his, I got a chance to see his scope, and that he's doing a turnkey proposal, meaning he's including all new control valves and all that. So since I'm knowing that he's updating the control valves, and then I can kind of quantify with our drawings and with our database that we already have on the controls, I can know how many points that is, how much programming time that's going to take. And actually, we have Derek Polak, who's our controls technician. He actually has been here.
Definitely number one in Ohio.
Yeah, he's been here at the City of Independence, I think, long time. And so he had an intimate knowledge of how long it's going to take to set up this size of unit, this type of unit, this many points. And he basically gave me a labor estimate on his time. And I just make sure I have the material figured for what it's going to take. So
we get a reduced rate from control for time for hourly rates because we have a contract with them. But also, they're pretty good. And I check with other, because I wanted to make sure the $35,000, a little high, the same. But I cost referenced it to other controls on other units that other people put in. And it's pretty good. I mean, it's more than what, like I say, you're balancing the air, you're taking time, you're coming back, you're making sure that everything, there's a lot of, in each unit, there's a lot of alarms, there's duct detectors, there's quite a bit of stuff. You'd be surprised. Fire, smoke, it's not like, it's more than what you think. And I'm always in that, same mode too.
I don't know if this takes like 5 minutes or.
It'll take days. They'll be here, believe it or not.
Detectors on these?
The control guys.
No, they're not new into like next December. That's how that long they are.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Smoke detectors. BK told me that the smoke detectors are not, they're not coming in until like next year, December. That's how backlogged they are on smoke detectors. So how does that work if we can't get them for these three units?
Well, we'll have duct detectors.
Yeah. I'm sure that.
No, they'll come up in units.
Yeah, they come up in units.
Okay.
You know, Michael, one other question. How long will you hold that proposal for price?
So it's difficult, like Jason can attest to. Obviously, we're going through a lot of pricing increases. The biggest thing is unknown labor increases. Johnson Controls at will could increase labor costs on us. So that's one factor that's difficult. And then the material is, electrical components, control boards are all contained in the field controller. So I have a 1 month hold on this one. I understand that, however much time you guys need, I can do a hold if we think that there's going to be some substantial progress. And specifically, I know it's not like you guys want to move forward there.
Well, my thing is, we go in and we vote on this next, this month in September, then there's a 6-month leeway on the machines. And we approve their contract next month, it's in September as well. Is that going to hold up 6 months from now?
So something we could do is, like order the material on our end so that you get the material at the cost that was agreed to. And then I can talk to our service manager, our local management to uphold the labor cost that was agreed to. So I think on something of this, it's like, it's our local team. It's not like we're relying on a factory or bringing in somebody. Like, I think we can find a way to basically hold the price.
Any other questions? Are we good to put this on September's legislation? Before it increases again? Dennis will.
Okay, and can I also add then the Johnson Control portion of it, which would be the $35,000?
I would say, yeah, just so we can lock that pricing in, at least for the equipment end of it.
We'll keep you posted on.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Mike.
We'll keep you posted on state warranty, and I'll keep you posted with Ryan's. I'm not sure when the grant's going to be awarded. The grant's going to be awarded, but if we get it, great.
And if you could just get us that warranty information, as you know.
Yeah, I'll request it tonight. We'll have it.
All right, Ms. Davis, you could just maybe email it out to all of us so we have an idea.
We'll do.
Okay.
Just so you know, Jason's an impatient grant.
We need to find some Padua guys in here.
What year?
2000.
I appreciate all your info. Mike, appreciate all your info.
You go to school at Bennett, you went to West Point.
That's a little bit. No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Dave, you're still on board. Let's talk to the gentleman with the windows.
Yes. Please. This is Carl Kerr from Pella. Carl, you don't want to hear, I guess. Come on, Carl. Carl Kerr's a rep from Pella, and he's been there for years. Just a great guy. And I guess the reason why, and you know, everybody talk about windows, there's currently Pella windows in the city hall. These are all Pella. And I guess my benchmark is to keep this building, I mean, this building architecturally and structurally, it's a very well-built building. I'm just telling you, it's a very well-built building. So I just use Pella as a benchmark, and I like to put Pellas. I like to put new windows in the building, and I like them to keep Pella. So we're going to, I think Dennis said, we're going to end up thinning this out. So I just want Pella to be our benchmark, and I'm still going to get Pella, but we got to get pricing. That's where we're at. Well, Carl,
well, there's 71 for the windows that we're going to keep.
Correct.
Right.
These windows are 4 years old.
One second.
Three years.
This is Pella's aluminum clad wood reserve window. So it's maintenance from the outside. And then we just give us inside to match the cap. So I think most of the windows were painted on the inside.
Oh, yeah, they're all. Yeah.
All right. Certain windows would have what we call a grill between the glass. So you could actually go up and clean both sides without touching the grid. But some of the windows also have this type of
appearance. And in those 71 windows, there's very large. They're architectural grade, you see them in the front. That's every window in the dormers and all. And now, Pella, the pricing reflects Pella removal, installation, cleanup, caulking, everything, and then the warranty. And I can attest the Pellas do. I mean, I've had guys come out Pella windows
5 years after they put it, and they'll adjust, you know, for free. They still got a hell of a warranty.
It's a 20-year warranty on glass, it's a 10-year warranty on the window, it's a 2-year warranty on the window.
But Carl did say that the company that he worked for, they've been people that make service calls after the 2 years or whatever, and they pretty much stand behind it, just because they've been around for how long?
Oh gosh, since the 1920s, actually. Like I said, I've been 2 years.
And so, you know, there's one little company, so obviously we bid it out, we have to bid in kind, you know? And I just, you know, I think our specs are stringent, and I want Carl here to answer any questions. And like I said, there's some big architectural windows. You see in, like, you know, courts there, I mean, council pockets, or council chambers, I mean, and they're all over the building. These are smaller ones, these double arms here. They're larger ones, much bigger ones. And that's why the cost reflects the bigger windows, too. I mean, it's expensive. Windows become expensive.
Well, I mean, you know, Tommy's a contractor.
Yeah, Tommy, you know.
And, you know, in my theory with this, you know, you get what you pay for. We've had pellet windows for 40 years that have done their job properly. Obviously, windows have advanced vastly in 40 years. I mean, I would want to go with a product that would give us another 40 years. So.
Well, like you said, the glass is warranty for 20 years.
Right.
And, I got to tell you this. I'm sure that there's many window companies have come and gone over the last 20 years.
Right.
They've been in business and out of business. And I've had first-hand experience of that. Build additions and
right.
People that went with cheaper windows and then the glass falls up after 8, 9, 10 years and they say, hey, but which manufacturer? Not only are they out of business, the manufacturer's out of business. So, go ahead.
Question for you. So, if it's our desire to have a Pella brand window, mm-hmm. Are there multiple distributors who can bid on a Pella brand window?
We are the largest distributor for Pella. We're located in our main office in Bedford Heights. So, we would actually provide quotations to different contractors that wanted to do the job.
Well, what happened, the business specifications are basically I took, you know, Pella's specifications and whoever bids on it, the window that they're going to install has to meet or exceed the Pella specification. I thought that Pella, you guys have your own,
well, because what I presented so far is to furnish and install to do a complete project.
Right, he's going to furnish the complete project as opposed to us going to another contractor. Having them bid, you know, the window, and they'll be bidding the labor.
And Carl's bid, they have the installers. In other words, they employ their installers. They don't contract out installers.
So from a legal perspective, are we precluding Anderson Windows from being
No, any window that would meet or exceed Pella's, it's not, the bid won't be written as, you know, a bid for Pella windows. The window bid will be...
Could they meet that standard?
Right. You know, they have to...
That's what I'm asking.
In Anderson, I'm not familiar with Anderson. I'm sure that there are probably some other windows that could come close or meet or even exceed the Pella, you know, spec.
When they said this is a benchmark. And that's why I took it.
I'm sure there are windows that are better than Pella's, unfortunately, but...
That's why I make sure we're being fair.
Well, there's certain windows like this is aluminum skirted cladding on here. Mm-hmm. Anderson has a vinyl kind of clad. So I'm not saying Anderson's not a good product.
I just use them. So we're really pretty much recruiting anyone else who bid it in this one.
Oh no, there's if you look it up, there's stuff. There's aluminum clad windows.
There's a number.
3 or 4 or 5 aluminum clad windows.
Well, it's okay if you set a standard. I just
want to set the benchmark. That's all. Just want a good window. You know, I mean, there's a lot of window companies right now. I mean, there's a ton of window companies. You go all over and buy windows. So
There's different glass, there's different, you know, our values of glass, there's a ton of, you know, and the bigger windows. I've seen them where, you know, you get a bigger vinyl window and all of a sudden you get a big piece of glass and it lasts just a little better. All of a sudden glass breaks. And it's a heat call, but it's...
Which is something they blow earlier.
Yeah, and it's just...
Well, you know, my thing also is, you know, 20 years from now, I don't think the majority of us are going to be sitting around this table. I don't want them to have the same conversation 20 years from now.
I'm just saying, you know, I would, you know, that's 6 years, that's
20 years from now,
we could be at double.
I have both Pella and Anderson in my house. I have both. You know, and...
Throughout the city, our other facilities, do we have other window issues or these are the ones that haven't been replaced?
Do we have other window issues throughout the city?
We have other windows.
Oh, yeah, you know what? We have, believe it or not, we have all the Bellas at Stark Hall. Beautiful windows, absolutely gorgeous, excellent installation, absolutely gorgeous windows.
Carl, you may not know the answer for this, but in a commercial environment, what would you say the percentage of windows that are used in a commercial building like this? Is it Pella? Is it Anderson? Or is that kind of a hard?
I really can't tell you that. I know that since I don't know commercial. That's all I use commercial work. So I think single story to multi story. These are all IGP maybe turn up with one stories. I don't know if the competition does that.
But a quick question, do you do any tinting or shading to keep the air conditioning in?
It's got a great new value type of thing. It's a low E argon film and slitting glass. There are different glazings, but I thought that one was good.
Essentially, if the outside of that window, it's got the sun beating at it at 90 degrees. That window will be 90 degrees on the outside. But on the inside, it's going to be a different temperature. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a vast difference.
Not much building. Yeah. If you're saving energy by putting it up,
So the other thing, too, I should also talk about lead times because everybody's talking about that stuff, too. Right now, we would say, let's go ahead and move forward with this. We come out, we verify dimensions, we use shop drawings for your records. When we order the product, it will take, from the time we start, 29 weeks, before we'll be here installing.
So, hey, garage door takes 9 months now, commercial door, it's 9 months. 4 months. But we wait for our big commercial door to the city takes 9 months. So let's at least when we came here and tell you that we're going to bid it out, we'll get it right away, and we'll see where it lands. But I just wanted to present so that we know, you know what's going on. This I'd like to get them.
So here's another one. 29 weeks is essentially March, April. It's springtime again. I mean, if we have to bid this out, that process is at least, 30 days?
Actually, 22 days, but yeah, 30.
So we wouldn't see this on legislation until potentially October.
Right.
So now that's going to put us another, yeah, so.
Do we have to go to bid?
Yes. That is the field we have. There, it's not on any, state contract or any procurement organizations.
So state contract doesn't have glass or is on that column.
They didn't have any glass windows. Or not glass windows, but just they have there was glazing, but no windows. Window glazers.
Did I hear you say you have different installers?
No.
What was the word I heard?
You had their own.
The installers that we have, when I first started, the Dunn Corporation, which is Pella, they owned this installer for, I would say, the first 12 years that I was there. then that group actually broke out on its own. And ever since then, all they've done is the commercial installation with the salt.
So the one thing that would be simpler that could save time is you can put these on state term, just upload them, probably takes a half hour. Then you don't have to bid it at all, then we can do it the next day.
Put it on.
Anyone can be on state term if they want to.
There isn't a contract. Pella does not have a contract on the state.
Well, you can upload your own contract, can't you? Or if they don't have a commodity, you can upload your own commodity, can't you, and set a price?
Not that I'm aware of.
I think you can.
Maybe you can.
I'll apply to.
We did it with Nature's Plan.
Oh.
There was no one else was doing stone flooring.
Okay.
So we set the price.
Okay, I understand.
I get it. Yeah.
But if you had a competitor, it's something I'll get to.
Okay.
Like I said, I just thought, Carol, I wanted to set the price for you guys. Because I heard talk, I don't think over the spider head guy. That's all.
That's it.
And these are just the exterior windows, not any of these interiors?
No, no.
This is all extra, starting one.
Like I said, something's like that.
Really big windows.
Yeah.
Although in fact, believe it or not, if these were all over the place years ago, you know, right now we have sills that are rotting out and all that. They ordered all the windows. Now there's no maintenance free outside, maintenance free.
Well, I think everybody sitting at the table got their electric bill and gas bill last month with the NOPEC added to it now. And, you know, I think we would save a tremendous amount of energy with these windows.
It's only going to get more expensive.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, my NOPEC is more than what my actual illuminating company is. We got a problem there. So.
You keep your posted.
Yeah.
Same thing.
You know, put it out to bid.
Okay.
And then.
Look into, see if we can do it as Jim suggested.
Yeah, you might do it.
We run that through the law department. Ask them or no?
The state.
The state.
Yeah.
That's 5 or 10 years in lockup.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just send Jim because it was his idea.
We got a bunch of contracts.
Legal. Okay. Thanks, Carl. Is there any other questions for Carl? Okay, we'll jump to number two, the charging station. Ryan?
What about charging stations? So, a few months ago, I received information from a company called GreenSpot. They're based out of New Jersey. I actually put Dustin here to answer any questions, concerns with the COO of the company. Received information on charging station around the park, specifically Honest Pavilion. Have this stuff out for everyone.
Thank you. Thank you.
So these charging stations, there are a total of 6 of them in the contract. The way that works is GreenSpot, they're an electric service equipment owner and operator. So they install it, run it, manage it. The beauty of this is that it costs the city $0 to install and run and do that amenity to our residents. Why to keep it short and sweet to the point. Let me set jokes here. I'll answer any questions. My belief is that, you know, this could, you know, really benefit some residents. Right now, there's a handful of electric cars that are up there. I think it'd be nice, obviously, for, you know, let's say you're a resident coming home from work. You want to go work out at the Civic Center, so you can just plug your car in there and charge. Or maybe you're from out of town, you have a baseball tournament during the summer out there. You drive far, you get there, you want to charge the car, and you make your way back home.
Who pays the electric bill?
So that would come out of the city, but then we're reimbursing for the base by Green Spot. And Joe, you know, step in at any point and tell them to answer questions and so on.
Yeah, good evening. Thanks for inviting me to the meeting today. As Ryan mentioned, I'm Jody Simone, the Chief Operating Officer of Green Spot. Green Spot was founded in 2014. We have several hundred charging stations throughout the U.S. and in Israel. And our primary business model is to own and operate the equipment for the term of our agreement with our partners. We reimburse for electricity, we profit share with the partner for the revenue that we make off of charging and idle parking. But we're able to do these projects as investments. Our core business is to invest in this infrastructure, operate it for the long term, maintain it, and then hopefully return that investment and continue to expand the network with our partners, which primarily are municipalities. But we work with both private and public property owners. Typically we start these conversations with municipalities. We figure out how to make the agreement work and fit with your legal process. And then once we execute that agreement, we can start with any number of locations that you would like us to take a look at. And then we start the construction phase once we get investment approval internally. Everything we do is internal, so we invest internally. We have our own general contractor. We do sub out once we start the construction. But a good example of what we've done so far is actually close by in Columbus, Ohio. So they're a longtime partner of ours. And we have 17 electric vehicle parking spots there throughout downtown Columbus. I reached out to Ryan earlier this year because throughout the state of Ohio, there's various different programs going on right now that help accelerate what we do. The municipality right now really doesn't have a network of EV chargers for your community. And the community is going to be demanding this pretty aggressively as time goes on, because they're really going to want to start adopting EVs and switching over. Typical lease period is 3 years, so we would anticipate probably in the next 3 years or less, you're going to start seeing a lot more requests from your constituents to provide publicly available charging. We're here to help with that situation. Like I said, we make the full investment so that it doesn't cost the municipality anything. And then we work with the municipality to really plan out, we can go as small or as big as you want to go. And we're very flexible. So if you want to start with one charger just to see how it goes, that's fine. If you want to look at 10 properties at the same time, that's also okay. We have a full range of equipment that's white labeled for our network. So there's, you've heard of level 2 chargers, I'm sure, or DC fast chargers. We have a full range of what's required for any type of municipality. And once we install that equipment, we operate it for the term. If anything goes wrong with the equipment, we're responsible, we maintain it, and we're incentivized to ensure that it stays operational. As time goes on, we monitor utilization. If we install equipment, we're monitoring it for a period of time and we see lots of usage, we'll make recommendations to the municipality to continue to expand, potentially add more stations, and continue to look at other locations that are interested.
So what's the cost to a person who's charging their car there for an hour?
Yeah, so I mean, the going rate around the country right now, it's roughly about $2.50 an hour to charge. So what that ends up looking like compared to a gasoline-powered vehicle is it's going to cost you roughly about half as much to charge your electric vehicle compared to what you spend at the pump to fill your vehicle up with gasoline. So right now there's a big savings in terms of filling the EV back up with electricity versus having a gasoline-powered car. There's also lots of state-level incentives to help people adopt EVs. There's tax credits You know, there's other programs that provide other assistance.
Tom asked a question.
And, you know, a big portion of why we prefer the equipment to be publicly located is so that, you know, people that don't have their own garage, you know, don't have the ability to install their own charger, and maybe they don't also have it at work, have another another solution in the community that they can use to recharge their EV. So that's really what we're all about, and happy to answer any questions.
Is it cost efficient if I was to charge at home compared to charging a public area?
It's going to cost you more to charge in public. Right at home, you're going to be paying for your electricity. So whatever your you know rate per kilowatt is at your house, that's what you'd pay. You wouldn't pay a premium because there's no other, there's not like someone like our company operating that equipment for you.
Right, because the reason I ask is basically we don't have apartments or any places where most people, if they chose electric vehicles, could charge them at home. So
they would just have that initial cost to their charging station up in their garage.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, like if the community has a lot of houses, single family houses with garages, then, you know, there's a good chance that anybody that has an EV most likely probably got a very slow charger along with the purchase of the EV, right? You know, a lot of these home chargers can plug directly into a normal outlet, but then they also have sort of like a slightly upgraded version where you'd need to upgrade to like 240 volt service to be able to connect that up, and it's going to charge your at your house a little bit faster. Our units are kind of one step above that. You know, and it really depends on what the mix is in your community. But we see usage really no matter how big or small the community is. We work with municipalities, you know, roughly about 3,000 people. Like I said, all the way up to the size of Columbus, Ohio. That's our biggest municipality right now.
Right, with the area that you have blocked off there, you know, how many you put four stations in there, or what do you?
So in the contract, it's six parking spots, but it would be three dual chargers, so for total of six.
Six, huh? Yeah. And Mayor, we're looking at the municipal lot that's going to go on the Rockside Woods. We're looking at having charging stations there.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
A couple questions. Have you approached our private sector? I mean, we don't have gas stations at the park, and we don't have other private vendors at the park. This would be the only private vendor that would be there. Have you approached, you know, private parking, you know, private buildings first?
No, we haven't in your area yet. You know, because we're based out of New Jersey, a lot of our private sector is in, you know, New Jersey, New York, you know, kind of, we have a lot of them in Virginia. We're in nine different states right now on private property. But, you know, typically once we start working with a municipality, they'll have connections to private property owners, and they can start to make those introductions as time goes on. And if we end up installing on public property, there'll be lots of marketing. So people that do own maybe parking facilities or, you know, other you know, property in the area that might be interested, shopping centers, that sort of thing, will begin to reach out to us. But also if the municipality has anyone that they know, happy to start up those conversations as well.
Yeah, from my perspective, I would not want to see this in the park. I think it's going down the road of now having private companies in public park, and, you know, the gas stations didn't ask us to put pumps in the parks, and, you know, they went out and bought property and had a filling station. So I just philosophically oppose the idea of doing this. And wouldn't for the government subsidizing the heck out of this thing, these things wouldn't be, very few people would buy them. The average car costs $66,000. They just jacked up the price again, Ford and GM the other day. Ford and GM have combined lost $3 billion in the past year building EV cars. I don't think the government should be involved with this until the market's ready.
just see something on TV the other night, but there last night, California's gonna stop selling gas cars.
Yeah.
You know, 2035 or something.
Grandfather, you see a lot of old cars running.
Yeah.
Driving there.
Wait till they read the Interstate Commerce Act.
You don't have the legs to provide what they have now. I hope they have plans to improve their grid.
There's no way.
Does anybody else have any questions for either Ryan or?
Well, thanks for the education.
Thank you very much.
I do have a question. It was referenced profit sharing during your presentation. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we partner with the municipalities, so we want you to be able to collect some revenue off of the property that you're allowing us to install chargers on, right? So that's really what it's meant for. And the profit share would be on a quarterly basis, and you'd get a check in the mail for whatever that profit share was. It's hard to estimate what it will be because you can't predict utilization, right?
But, is it a negotiated percentage, or how do you structure it?
I mean, it can be, you know, but to be honest, I mean, it doesn't sound like the municipality is really interested in it, right? I mean, it's, or correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, we have another location, I mean, we were thinking about the one that we're going to...
Right, support. And just to clarify, that's a grant-funded program that we're... utilizing on the Rockside.
On Rockside, so it's something different.
Yeah, and I just have a question. I mean, if we don't want to see them in the park, I mean, when we look at other city-owned lots where they might be utilized, for example, the property next to James Sink building.
I should just go to the private sector first, and I'm sure if the people want them, then they'll negotiate with them. Because we don't know what we're going to do with those parking lots. We hope they're not parking lots for a very long period of time, and that might be not be in his best interest to do something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't hear that last comment, so you said that you hope that the parking lots are your parking lots for a very long time?
Yeah. We own parking lots in the center of town, but we don't really want them to be parking lots. They kind of are de facto parking lots. We'd really like to see that developed into something. So what we're thinking is if we did work with you on something like that, which would have a little bit more application based on what you guys do, you know, we couldn't guarantee that it's going to be there for X amount of years because we would like to
be tied into a three-year thing.
Yeah, if you had a short agreement, I don't know if that's profitable for you or not.
Well, and the other place I'm thinking about is the shopping center.
Well, and that's probably why
I mean, well, yeah, in that way, all right, so now you get charged and you go to the whatever facilities are there if you enhance the facilities. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a church on the corner of
Sterling. I heard that.
So, I tell you what, I'm happy to take a look at, you know, if you want to provide a list or a map of any public property, I could do a feasibility study and provide results on you know, potential locations, types of equipment, that sort of thing. Happy to spend time on that. If you want to try to connect me with any, you know, private property owners, I can start those conversations as well.
So I think what we'll do is we'll have a discussion with Ryan that you've been in contact with, and if we have a location ideas or if he talks with any private property owners that would be interested, then he could be your middleman between the city and the private people.
Okay. All right. And just to comment on, you know, if you're trying to sell the equipment, you know, or the property, or the property does sell, you know, we're not going to prevent that. You know, if it happens, it happens. Our agreement is designed in a way to be able to transfer if it has the ability to stay there, or it can go away. We're flexible on the situation.
You don't have a clause. The contract has to be broken before the time expires on it.
Yeah. There's different scenarios depending on why the agreement's terminated.
Okay.
And then there's also transferability. So if say they're just buying the parking lot to own and operate it, then the charger can stay there if they want that sort of amenity on the property. So.
What we're trying to do is develop the property into something other than a parking lot. And so it's been like that for quite some time. It could be viable for you, but we're just, you know, we've talked to an adjacent property owner and they may have something going on as well. So there could be action going on. I guess we didn't want to represent to you that, hey, this is going to be here for quite some time. It may be. It's been there for 30 years, but it may not be. So, you know, we're just thinking about that for you.
Yeah.
I know there's a cost. My former commanding officer used to do this for Volkswagen, make these charging stations just like what you have. And so but they're not inexpensive. So.
Yeah. I mean, we would be investing, you know, over 100 grand in just this public lot alone. You know, so it's a fairly good size investment. We do ask for a 15-year term. But, you know, but we would hope to be able to share profit and then boost that once we return the investment for the rest of the term. You know, I do urge you, I think it's the right way to go to install these on public property for the community. There's you don't have any chargers really in the area. The ones you do, some that you do have are broken, they're no longer functional. Others are not on public property. So, you know, I do suggest that you do install these on public property and we're here to help with that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks,
yep.
Joe.
Yep, not a problem. Hope you have a good night.
Too. Good night. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
I have to say I may be open to something like this, but I just don't think the park is the right location for it. So
yeah, I would agree. I think that by the location it's close to lots of people, but not necessarily bringing people in specifically.
Right. Okay, we'll move on to number five. We'll get like a kind of like, we had a little bit discussion about the dog park during Anthony's economic or community services meeting. We'll kind of expand with everybody that was there, kind of bring them up to speed.
Maybe be downtown at 6 o'clock, so I might excuse myself. So I like dogs and we can make it happen then.
Okay,
just one. Half park.
Yeah. Have that where you'll go with
it's I'm just going to try to run through very quickly what we said. You could bring this up back at the May, I think it was a May or April meeting, and then we brought up the community service meeting, and everybody seemed to be kind of interested in it. This is something that definitely is a need, especially since the pandemic. More and more people have gotten pets, especially dogs. You go in the park now, there's probably at least a half a dozen people walking the dogs. The fields, they're using the fields now currently for dog runs. And with all the issues we have with that, this past June, I think it was, the end of June, we had a dog incident there where a dog got out of one of the fields, ran into someone that was walking up the sidewalk, and we had a dog bite in the park. Police handled it, they charged the person and all that, but again, this is something that's not going away. We did budget the money back last year, if I'm not mistaken, and ideally we would like to have this dog park in the park somewhere, but we don't have the room right at this time. You know, if we eventually down the road acquire some more property surrounding the park, we'd be an ideal spot. So what we're proposing is the property behind the Kindle buildings. We talked about this before. Just up there today looking at, there's only really one house, I think it's a rental house that abuts this property. The next one, I think, is Priscina. They're actually a little bit down on Stone Road, but this where this is basically surrounded by commercial property or, well, there is one other property on Stone Road. I think it's, who lives there? It's Joel Wilson. Daniel Wilson House that's there, yeah. But there is a good buffer between the Wilson House and where the dog park would be. But, again, I throw it out there. The money is budgeted. We did get a price. What we would basically, the big cost is the fence.
And what's nice about this is that if we do end up developing that land up there, this fence can be dismantled and we can go and move this if we do ever end up acquiring more property near the park. So I'm bringing it up again to the Pennsylvania Building Committee because there's no big resistance. I'd like to try and go out to bid and get with Dennis. We'll write specs for the fence and we'll bid this out and go from there. So.
One of the conversations along the way was how do we make this resident available? Talking about a scan card to get in or what?
Yes, we would put a swipe reader on the access gate to this. Absolutely. So a resident would have to have a Civic Center membership or a, you know, have a golf cart membership. That would allow them to get in.
Yeah. Is blood lighting requirements or no? Sorry. It can't be kind of
operating. Yeah.
And so with these gates all on the eastern edge, would we be plowing and maintaining all of this in the wintertime, these access roads?
During snow, I don't think
it wouldn't really be in use during that time.
No, I don't think we would. Yeah. At least if it's going to shut. The only gates is the access gates are, I mean, the maintenance gates are really only for cutting the grass. So in the wintertime, the only gate that would actually open would be that center gate that maybe they go in and strip the two to them. The one side would be for small dogs, the other side for large dogs. That's how they set dog parks up.
So the service gates would be strictly for our
Yeah, they would put center
gates. You come in and you pick a large or small.
We only have a cost, we have a couple of benches up there and then maybe down the road if it's popular, they have dog obstacle courses and stuff we could buy, but at this point we're looking at step one here with the fence.
What kind of hours of operation would that be?
It would be, you would probably look at like 8 in the morning until dusk. We're never ready to get dark. We'll set the time with your passenger and be able to access it after whatever times you make it.
So I would
say between 8 in the morning until dusk.
So the people, they'll be parking on the west side, right, where the parking lot is. Would it make sense to have the gates on the west side too?
No, they park on the north. They park because this actually, the parking lot, this would be parking right up here. This is a gravel parking lot. Right.
Would you want, since we own the buildings, could we put cameras on the building just to protect from for safety and
security? Absolutely.
And we did discuss potentially like a water station for the dogs too. Right.
We could. Yep. We could. We could add that. You can get the water off of the buildings. I think right now we can the water. Who cleans this place up? Just like we do now, we send a guy up here. We maintain the rest of the property. We send a guy up there.
I mean, picking up the feces.
Well, we'll have signs up that there are people that will try to get up there. Kind of like what we do now. Yeah.
Well, you're picking up off the lawns.
Well, just have the camera.
I
see you up there with your dog, and that you know, won't be allowed back.
It's a valid point, picking it up. We've all said that. But my big issue is, you know, people's pets are using our outfields, and they're not picking it up. And we have little kids that are still using that for soccer and football, and, you know.
We will then start putting little post signs that you can't let a dog run out of the corner. That's what we're going to do. So we can kind of put the law down on that and enforce that, and our police department will enforce that.
Now, will this have to be rented to the law department, but can we post signs if this goes through on this that it's, you know, no non-residents? I mean, can any of that type of thing be posted?
You know, no, I think it would be with the residents' guests.
Yeah.
Because.
Right.
If somebody in front of town, you're.
Occupy will pass someone. There's got to be something.
Right.
Put a pair of.
We'll put it up there.
Kind of.
They got a child on.
They basically tell you if you're not a resident. It's on everything they have. I'm not Garfield.
Okay.
Fire the hose.
Yes.
I see what you're saying on the, you know, the gates on the east side, and if you're doing the swipe, you want to limit how people can get in and it's divided, but I still think the natural thing is people would come up, want to park here, or walk in from the center of town and want to get in on this west side, so if there's a way to.
The only problem.
It's overkill doing that.
Those buildings are still rented.
Yeah.
We can't use up.
I think it's an evening crowd, you know, I just think people are going to show up there and you want to walk around, and I think the other thing, if it is the walk-up crowd, I mean, this never, you know, this sidewalk ended here on the south side, so if you're coming from up here, you're kind of scattered here, you run out of sidewalk, there isn't anything on this side of the street, if it makes sense to continue the sidewalk, even if you're losing this apron, because I don't think you're getting the kind of traffic this way anymore.
But you could be now that you've watched it for a while.
That sidewalk on the south side of the building, but otherwise you're not, you're in the parking lot or the street.
You could add something later on, right? That's be portable enough to be able to add a gate if you had your.
And what was the cost roughly for that?
Back when we got the price for this layout, but no.
Yeah.
Don't be mad, we always say the same price.
It was like 19,000, I bet now it's about 25, 26.
$25 is what's encumbered.
Well, we have to have pregnancy liability. Just saying.
That's to be determined.
Well, you've got livestock and small.
Oh, you know, that's got to be on the owners. I mean, basically, if you're taking your dog to a dog park knowing that your dog is not fixed, then you're taking that in your own hands. I mean, what is our consensus between us about having this going to bid?
I'm for it. Let's make it as nice as it can. Otherwise, people are still going to go to the park if they can't compete.
Right.
You know what I mean? If it's not.
I'd like to see it out of, you know, until we have more space, I'd like to see it someplace else. So.
I am like John, switching that gate over to the western side, though. Just makes more sense having a big parking lot there.
Well, that is parking lot. On the east side, that's a gravel parking lot, so that's not paid, but I just don't want to interfere with the tenants. We can talk to them and ask them if they'd be a,
just kind of mark out.
Can we
park on the outside side or something? You can't park there without a dog. Shopping center.
But you got to come along the top. Maybe we option like an option bid on, you know, having this entrance on both sides. So if you do park here or you can do the access to both sides of it.
Good.
Is that feasible?
Nobody that parks in the back.
That you want to lose, no?
No. Yeah. Very few. Never. I mean, very, you never.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's, like you said, the busiest part of it would probably be after 5. People are home from work. And I really, I don't see many people.
Sundays are empty.
I mean, Dale's got a big parking lot behind his church. That might work too, to park it.
Well, what you'd end up doing, that's still flat on the Tuesday or Thursday. The west side, so the bid would be the same to me.
Right.
Yeah, so, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I guess that's the only real concern is the access, so there's no objection to moving it out.
Is there any sense to making this kind of a conditional? In other words, we're going to do this. It's a chunk of money, but like a time period will reevaluate?
Well, we're going to reevaluate continuously.
Right, but I'm just saying.
Well, you know, and I think, you know, he had mentioned, Tom had mentioned it. I mean, you know, we pay, you know, we have residents that pay $10 to add the pool pass, outdoor pool to their pool pass. Maybe, you know, we have a $5 charge. You know, if we want to keep it strictly for residents.
No, it's going to be for residents. We're going to ask.
I know it's terrible, that's why.
You just got to see how it goes. If it doesn't work, you got a nice soccer field, so there you go.
And it'll be a black and white coated thing with that, so we can, like I said, include the ball.
We'll get that out to bid then as well.
Yeah.
So, okay, we've looked at, by the way, Penny has, she's looking at a variety of different, more permanent locations. So there are options out there down the road to open over to. This would be best for them.
Then brings us to number seven. Any other matters before the committee?
Just a quick question. I know that the curb in the Civic Center parking lot was removed. With, I guess, the purpose of, you know, making it smooth. But I noticed that when they had the big downpour before home days, there was a big water issue because that curb would trap the water and send it down to the drains. And you wouldn't get the whole parking lot all shed toward the one side,
right,
where it was ankle deep over by the alumni booth. So I just bring that up as whether or not there should be a even just a little hump there or something. I don't know.
The trench strip.
I don't know. I'm just.
You know, that probably would have been a bad idea.
Do you know a certain amount of companies when you ring it? That was one of those springs we got 2 inches of an hour that time.
Yeah.
And actually, the drains that were used, I actually went out there, that was one of my worries and concerns for it, was that the way that more water gone. But when that water got to those drains, it took it down, and I went down to the pool, and we had no issues with the water going in the pool. That was my biggest concern.
The drains were having that severe storm.
Yeah, that was a real heavy rain.
So we have those isolated situations when like a home days or something, but for normal
rain, it's not like that at all.
Right. It sheets and then hit the curb.
Right. It would break the drains.
Right. More capable hammer though.
I watched that. Like, you know, somebody was there with me, and we went around and tried to pull it out during that rain again.
Yeah, if that's another issue, what you mentioned, the trench drain, you grab some of that.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. There is one more curb cut that Nathan brought up an idea. Oh, it was the restrooms that we're going to cut that curb. Mm-hmm. It says an added,
yeah,
extra added. So we sent us on that test.
There's a drain.
We've got to cut that curb in the wrong order. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Thank you, gentlemen.
Make a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Yeah, you got it.
All in favor?
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.